Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Got a fresh new episode for you on the letter of James. And today we're going to be looking at what I consider perhaps the most challenging verse, certainly the most bracing verse I've ever read in the New Testament. It comes from James chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. That's where we left off. And here's what James writes. If anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself, and his religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Wow, that is so powerful. The Catholic journalist J.D. Flynn once said that, really, that verse, James 1:27, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. That in itself could maybe be the only examination of conscience that we'll ever need. Well, we might need a little bit more than that, but that's not a bad take. That's not a bad take, because this is where the rubber really meets the road here. So James is going to talk about pure religion. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless. And that's what we're looking for, right? We want the kind of Catholic faith that God is going to be pleased with. We don't want to deceive ourselves, and that is so easy to do, as James will explain. So he's going to talk about three things. Number one, controlling your tongue. Easier said than done. Number two, acts of love, acts of charity. That's where the rubber meets the road. And also, he's going to talk about how to avoid temptation. This whole idea of keeping oneself from being polluted by the world, that's really what it's all about. It's resisting temptation. So just going to summarize it a little bit, then we're going to dig into the nitty-gritty of each of those things. And so let's talk first of all about controlling one's tongue, what we say. Now, James, later on, he's going to talk much more about this, so we'll just briefly deal with it right now. But the word that he uses here, he talks about in verse 26, bridling the tongue. And really, that's the same kind of word in Greek that's used for placing, for example, a bit in the mouth of a horse, you know, guiding an animal with this iron bit in its mouth. Wow. So the tongue is considered to be kind of wild, almost like a bucking bronco, just out of control. And it needs to be tamed. It needs to be domesticated, if you will. And this is hardly unique to James. This is a theme that runs throughout the entire Bible, actually. In Psalm 34, verse 13, it says, "Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking lies." Let's look also at Psalm 39, verse 1, where it says, "I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth as long as the wicked are in my presence." Also really powerful. And so James is actually going to use a special word here. There's just so much in these two verses that he's packed in. He says, if anyone thinks he is religious in verse 26 and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, this man's religion, this person's religion is in vain. And the Greek word that he uses for heart, by the way, is cardia. Think about a doctor of the heart, a cardiologist. We're all familiar with that term. And really what he's going to deal with here are three different things. We've often talked about orthodoxy, and you've heard that term before. Orthodoxy simply means, there's nothing to do with the Orthodox churches of the East. It means right belief, orthodoxy. Orthodoxa, right belief. But then we have, as James says, the heart, the cardia, We also need orthocardia. We need to have a right heart. So orthodoxy is knowing what to believe in your head. Orthocardia means believing in your heart, having a right heart. But then we need another one. We need a third element, orthopraxis. And that's what to do, your practice of your faith, orthopraxis. So we need right belief, orthodoxy, a right heart, orthocardia, and we need right praxis, orthopraxis. In other words, what we need is head, heart, and hands. We need a total, complete, and coherent faith. It doesn't get any simpler than that, but it also doesn't get more challenging. That's easier said than done. And at the end of the day, very often, a lot more is said than done in the Catholic faith. Now, he might have also added, we need to have a right tongue as well, or a right mouth, but James will have a lot more to say about that later on. So, the challenging verse here in verse 27, well, it's all challenging, but verse 27 really stands out when he talks about pure religion as looking after orphans and widows in their distress. Now, why does he say this? I think it's bigger than just orphans and widows, but orphans and widows are obviously two groups of people that God really cares about a lot. He talks about this a lot in the Old Testament. We're going to go over this in a little bit, but orphans and widows are very vulnerable because they don't have the protection that they need. So they're open to being exploited. So really, although he mentions specifically orphans and widows, but he could be talking about anyone who is vulnerable. There are so many people in our world today that are trafficked, who are sold into slavery, essentially, whether it's sexual slavery or domestic slavery. And also we could think of the unborn who have no one to protect them, except for maybe our voices as we try to lend our voice and also the work of our hands to the pro-life cause, trying to help widows, orphans, unwed mothers. Think about so many vulnerable people in our culture that would fit under this umbrella. This is what it says in the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 18. It says, He, God, defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing. So people who are migrants, if you will, they need help too. They need to be looked after in terms of their basic needs, and we can help them too. So all over the Old Testament, this theme is there. And then finally, one last element here is keeping yourself from being polluted by the world. Now, when James talks about the world here, he's not talking about the universe. He's not talking about planet Earth, if you will. He's talking about the world order, as one writer says, corrupted and evil in rebellion against God. That's what James is talking about here. But he doesn't want us to get out of the world. And Jesus doesn't want us to do that either. In fact, in John chapter 17, verse 15, this is part of Jesus' high priestly prayer as he's praying to the Father before he goes to the cross. This is what he says. I'm going to actually back up a couple of verses here. In verse 14 of John 17, Jesus says, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. And for their sake, I consecrate myself, that they also may be consecrated in truth. I do not pray for these only. And Jesus is really talking about the apostles that were there before him. I do not pray for these only, but also for those who believe in me through their word. That's all of us throughout the ages, right? That they all may be one, Jesus says, even as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory which you have given to me, I have given to them, that they may be one, even as we are one, I in them, and you in me, that they may become perfectly one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me." So, I mean, there's just so much rich theology there in this high priestly prayer of Jesus. But this whole idea of, hey, I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. And as so many commentators have said, this is the whole concept of being in the world, but not of the world. And Jesus himself was like that. He came from the sinless purity, of course, of heaven, and was born into this dirty, messy world, filthy with sin more than anything. And it started with his humble birth into these extreme circumstances, as it were. And it continued on through his dealings with sinful people that are nonetheless loved by God, potential saints. And so Jesus rubbed shoulders with them. He never was like them in their sins, but they knew that he loved them, that he accepted them for who they were, but he didn't want them to stay that way. He began to work on them. And that's exactly what he wants for us as his followers. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. So let's look a little bit deeper into these issues, these three concepts that James wants to bring up here. Really, this is what pure and undefiled religion is all about: controlling our tongue, acts of love, and resisting temptation. Now, one of the things that James talks about here in this whole section is that we can deceive ourselves. He says, this person, if they don't keep a tight rein on their tongue, we deceive ourselves and our religion is worthless. He says that in verse 26. And so the human capacity for self-deception really knows no bounds. So how do we know that our Catholic faith is really real? We've got to look at the way that we live from Monday to Saturday. It can't be different than the way we live on Sunday mornings. We've got to go into the middle of the world and bring our faith with us. That's so clear. Our character should never change. So what's a good sign that we're not deceiving ourselves? Well, sign number one, of course, is the way that we use our tongue, the way that we talk. If anyone thinks that he or she is religious without controlling their tongue, that religion is useless or worthless, and that person deceives themselves. A lot of people talk, and there's certainly a lot of chatter in our world, and social media, the internet, has only amplified that. We're so quick to share our thoughts, our opinions, whether they're educated opinions or not. But sometimes that chatter can go into the realm of sin. Things can go a little bit too far. And the preacher, Ray Pritchard, gives some examples of signs that your tongue maybe needs that bridle, like a horse needs a bridle. What's an unbridled tongue? Well, it's a tongue that will speak in vulgar terms, obscenity, using indecent language, maybe off-color jokes, insults, personal insults, humor at someone else's expense to put them down, maybe outbursts of anger, harsh words, mean-spirited comments. And by the way, I think that's true online as well as in real life, quote unquote, spreading gossip, false accusations, rumors, imputing bad motives to people, criticizing family members publicly, yelling and screaming, intimidating threats, endless criticism, quick cutting comments, cheap shots, talking without listening, condemning others, exaggerating the faults of others. And then when you say these unkind things, excusing yourself by saying, hey, I was just kidding, or I was only joking. Well, this is no joke. Proverbs 18:21 says, the tongue has the power of life and death. So when you open your mouth, really two things can come out of your mouth, either words of life or words of death. St. Paul talked about the throat as being an open grave, you know, some of these words of death that can come out of our mouths, and that's in Romans chapter 3, verse 13. And as Jesus said in the gospel, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Our words tend to reveal the inner state of our soul. And one thing that I found intriguing that Ray Pritchard talked about was that the average person speaks 16,000 words every day. Just so you know, that's the equivalent of a 64-page book. So how about that? You've essentially written a book every single day of your life. In a week, you can speak the equivalent of a 450-page book. That's a heavy one. That can weigh something down on a coffee table. In a month, you can speak 480,000 words. That's the equivalent of a book that's 1,920 pages. In 1 year, you can speak over 5.7 million words. That's about four volumes of an encyclopedia. If you go out to maybe a typical lifespan of 70 years, the average person can speak over 403 million words. That's an entire encyclopedia set multiplied by nine. Okay, that is pretty sobering, especially when Jesus says that we will account for every careless word we have ever spoken. Gulp. We need his forgiveness, don't we? We really do. And we also need to watch what we say. What if someone is reading the book that you're writing every day with your words? Somehow this is all written down in heaven, in the videotape room of heaven. Wow. Imagine if you could hear it played back to yourself. Man, did I actually say that? If the people you loved the most heard what you said every day, these offhand comments, when you're under pressure, what you might react with, when you're criticized, what do you say under your breath? These things we wouldn't want other people to know. And so we've got to get a hold of our tongues, especially in this modern age of social media, in which we're encouraged to broadcast every single thought that we've ever had. And if we're not doing it, we feel like we're strange. So we've got to really work on this. And I don't think any of us have hit 100% capacity on having words of life only coming out of our mouths. And so we've got to work on it. It's not enough to just say, well, 70% of the time I'm speaking words of life. What about the other 30%? It's like saying, well, 70% of the time I'm not killing anybody, but 30% of the time I am committing murder. That's not that nobody would say that's good. But so often our words can kill. Our words can kill someone's reputation if they don't kill them physically. That's why they can be very, very serious sins. We need the grace of God to help us with our tongues. But also, as James says, there's a second thing that we need to look at. And that is, of course, these works of life. We don't just need words of life. We need works of life, works of charity, charitable acts. And this is where he says in verse 27, pure and undefiled religion before our God and Father is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. We talked about that a little bit earlier, in that these orphans and widows obviously James really does mean that specifically, but it's more that. It's any vulnerable person who needs our help. Someone once wrote a poem called, and his name was Bob Rowland, he wrote a poem called Listen, Christian. It's pretty convicting. I'm going to read this poem to you. He writes, I was hungry, and you formed a humanities club and discussed my hunger. Thank you. I was imprisoned, and you crept off quietly to your chapel in the cellar and prayed for my release. I was naked, and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick, and you knelt and thanked God for your health. I was homeless, and you preached to me about the spiritual shelter of the love of God. I was lonely, and you left me alone to pray for me. You seem so holy, so close to God, but I'm still very hungry. Whoa, that's a convicting word right there. Where does the rubber meet the road in our lives? It's not enough just to have orthodoxy. It's not enough just to know the teaching of Christ. We've got to do it. We've got to put on our hard hat and get to work, because our faith, if it's real, is going to try to meet people's real needs, not just talk about it. Our prayer is important. Our prayer moves the hand that moves the world, but we also need to understand that God is counting on us to be his hands and his feet. So we got to help those who are in distress. In Exodus chapter 22, verse 22, it says, "Do not take advantage of the widow or the fatherless." In Isaiah 1:17, "Defend the cause of orphans, fight for the rights of widows." In Zechariah 7:10, it says, "Do not oppress the widow or the orphan." You know, widows were very much unprotected, as were orphans in the first century when James was writing. In Mark chapter 12, verse 40, Jesus absolutely blasted religious leaders of his time, who he said they devoured widows' houses, while at the same time making long prayers, showing off their public piety. And as an example of this, as a case in point, there is, of course, the widow who comes along and puts her two small copper coins, they were known as a lepta, that was the unit of measurement, literally represented her last meal. That was exactly the amount that she would need to buy enough flour to make herself a small muffin or something like that to feed herself. And so she literally put her last meal in the treasury, in the offering. And that's obviously a great sign of piety and faith and trust in the Lord on her part. And so many thousands, if not millions, of sermons have been preached about her generosity. But Jesus wants to make another point. The religious authorities should have been looking after people like her. She never should have been in that position in the first place. Wow. So we really got to think about this. And I had a friend named Natasha who years ago, she belonged to my church. She literally did this. She put these words of James into action. She looked after orphans in their distress, as well as kept herself from being polluted by the world. She went to Romania as a young unmarried woman. She felt a call from God to go to Romania to minister to orphans there. And the poverty, the need that she met there was overwhelming. And she wrote back to her church community to tell us about what she was going through. I want to quote from a letter that she sent. She said, "I am so thankful to Jesus. It was 1 year ago this month I first came to Romania. My whole life has changed radically, all for the better. God is using me here for his glory, and by serving him, I've been given so much joy, peace, fulfillment, and love. God has and continues to do amazing things in and through me. The children have both blessed and broken my heart. I never understood loneliness and what it was to be unwanted until I looked into these children's eyes. I've never seen the effects of children so deprived of love that they rocked themselves to sleep, moaning and crying all night long. I never saw children so desperate to be remembered that they would carve the initials of the volunteers into their cribs. I never saw such broken people as when I passed by fathers and mothers forcing their children to beg on the streets day after day to satisfy their own addictions rather than begging for food. I never felt the battle between good and evil until I felt Satan's stronghold on so many people, causing so much misery. But I've also never experienced God's comforting arms until I cried and ached so much for these children that he gave me renewed peace and strength from his word. I never knew all the comfort I had in Jesus Christ until I came here, the incredible strength of his love and power. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for continuing to lift me up. God has been working on my senses. I no longer think of the smell, the dirt, the environment when I see these children, these young people. I just have a wonderful time being with them. Their love is such a blessing and motivation. Got to continue to nurture our relationship. Thank you for your support, prayers, and love. God's love is touching and changing many lives here in Romania. May God bless you all, Natasha. What an incredibly powerful letter. And Natasha herself went on to personally adopt two of those Romanian children in the orphanage and brought them back to North America. That was an incredible thing for a young unmarried woman to do, because sadly, a lot of men would never have wanted to marry somebody who has already sort of had that insta-family, if you will. And I'm not sure I want to raise someone else's child, but Natasha did meet a wonderful young man who married her, and they have an incredible life together now. But I've always thought of her when I thought of this verse, that religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Folks, our faith needs to work, and that's one of the big themes of James. And not just to have right belief, orthodoxy, but to have a right heart, orthocardia, and a right practice, orthopraxis, head, heart, and hands working together for the kingdom. For The Faith Explained, I'm Cale Clark. We'll see you in the next episode. And don't forget to catch me later today on The Cale Clark Show, live at 5 p.m. Central, right here on Relevant Radio. If you've missed an episode, you can check the podcast at the Relevant Radio website. Just look for our Faith Explained page, or go to the Relevant Radio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to share the show with a friend. God bless you, and we'll see you in the next one. Peace.